Good morning, everyone. I hope you're well. Wishing you a freilich, a happy Erev Chanukah. Today, just have an announcement. Our usual sponsor is, of course, Mel David, but today, on the 24th of Kislev, all learning in the entire Israel Center is sponsored by Mel David and his family in memory of our beloved wife, mother, grandmother, Sylvia David, Tzvia Chaya Bat Aryeh Lev, Teinashas Ruvitz Rachayim, and may all of the learning be le'iloi nishmata. Today, I will try to get in some Chanukah thoughts, at least in the second half, but the first half, I do want to finish up the topic that we discussed, but go to it from the opposite perspective. Last week, we were exploring the basic idea that the Torah does not automatically perfect a person. The Torah does not remain in a person unless they first have midos tovos. And without midos tovos, then God forbid, not only will the Torah not elevate a person, but God forbid it can even make a person worse, more arrogant, more competitive, and the like. And you'll recall that the Vilna Gaon developed this idea based on the Maimer Chazal that Torah is compared to water. And there are many reasons. Water purifies, water goes from the arrogant to the humble. But yet another reason, the Vilna Gaon says, a very striking reason, is that water accentuates the growth of whatever it falls on. So if it falls on wheat or grain or vegetables, you will get the wheat, grain, and vegetables. If the water falls on poisonous weeds, the water will cause the poisonous weeds to grow. Whatever is in the ground is what the water will cause to grow. The Vilna Gaon says, whatever is in the person, the Torah will enlarge and exaggerate. And thus, God forbid, if a person has bad midos, the Torah itself may even make him worse. So based on this idea, it is absolutely important that a person work on their midos tovos in order for the Torah to elevate them. Otherwise, the Torah will not elevate them. But what's interesting is we see an opposite idea, both in Chazal and in the Vilna Gaon's commentary in and of itself. Chazal say in the Talmud Yerushalmi, I mentioned it last week, that Hashem says, Halvai osi ozvu v'torasi shomaru. If only the Jewish people would even leave me, forsake me, but embrace my Torah, I would be happy, Hashem says, Shahamor Sheba, the light of the Torah itself, Machziro Lamutav, shall eventually bring them back to me. There is something in the Torah itself that brings you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which means you have these two contradictory ideas that are actually working at the same time. One is, Torah does not work on a person who doesn't have good midos. But number two, the Torah makes you a better person. Now obviously, these are not a contradiction, although they do emphasize two different ideas. And that is, like anything else, in order for the Torah to influence you, you have to be a vessel to receive its light. And the vessel that enables you to receive the light is the midos tovos. Without midos tovos, you are not a kli that can receive the ore. But once you are a kli, even in a little bit, the Torah will enlarge and will strengthen and will make the kli bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So midos tovos are both a prerequisite to Torah learning and a result and a consequence of Torah learning. The things work together at the same time. And thus the Vilna Gaon writes, and this of course is more what you would expect from the Vilna Gaon, E efshar laharog es hayetzer hara. It is impossible to kill the yetzer hara, ela b'limud haTorah, except through the learning of Torah. And let me quote, since we want to connect it to a pasuk in Mishlei, let me show you the pasuk in which we have some very, very interesting additional commentaries on it. This is in Perek Chafei, chapter 25, pasuk Chavalev, verse 21. And that pasuk says, it's actually a fairly famous pasuk, Im ra'ev sonacha, if your enemy is hungry, hachileu lechem, give him bread. V'im tzameh, and if your enemy is thirsty, hashkeu mayim, give him water. In other words, and the next pasuk continues, ki gecholim ata chote al rosho, because by doing so, you are pouring hot coals on his head. V'Hashem yishalei lach, and God will reward you at the same time. Now, before we get to the Vilna Gaon's commentary, what is the pasuk saying al pipshat? Because we always have a klal, ein mikra yotze midei pshuto, that a verse should normally be understood in its simple meaning. And the simple meaning, although this may not be the ultimate spiritual meaning, is I have an enemy, I have a person I don't like, I have a person that's done bad to me, and that person is in a hard place, that person is suffering, that person is going through deprivation. The natural human impulse is to rejoice, oh, Baruch Hashem, that bad guy is getting their comeuppance. But Shlomo HaMelech suggests the other way. If your enemy is hungry, give him food. If your enemy is thirsty, give him drink. Now, so far so good. That's kind of a beautiful idea that, you know, it really corresponds to the Torah itself. Do not take revenge. Lo sikom. Velo sikor. Don't bear a grudge.
Unload the animal of your enemy.
That's right. The Gemara says if you have two different people to help, unload. One is your enemy and one is someone that you like, is a bigger mitzvah to unload the animal of your enemy, because that conquers your yetzer hara. So far so good. The problem with the pshat though is the next pasuk, because the next pasuk seems to suggest almost a sadistic idea, because when you help your enemy, then you're really sticking it to him. Gechalim Atachote al Rosho. In other words, the best revenge is to show a person that you're not like them. Now, the problem with that is, psychologically that actually is true, that if you really want to get your enemy, show that you're better than him. The problem is that simple pshat is actually a direct violation of a lav in the Torah. There are two lavin in the Torah about revenge. Lo sikom, velo sitor. Both of them mean don't take revenge and don't bear a grudge. Now the Gemara explains what is the difference between nekama and nekira. So the Gemara gives an example. If I asked you to borrow your vacuum cleaner and you said no, and the next day you ask me to borrow my lawnmower or something, so if I say, no, you didn't help me, I'm not going to help you, that's nekama. But if I say, sure, I'm not like you, feel free to borrow. So that's not nekama, because I am giving you the object, but I'm bearing a grudge. So this idea that I'm sticking it to my enemy by being nice to him, although, you know, obviously there's a certain human satisfaction in that. That's against the Torah, right? That's a violation of netira, bearing a grudge. So because of this, the Mefarshim do understand this pasuk in a non-literal way, because the reason is the pshuto shel mikra would be a violation of the Torah, which is not possible. And the Gemara in Sukkah understands that the enemy that is hungry and the enemy that is thirsty is none other than the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara has to be fed like an angry beast. And how is the Yetzer, what is the food of the Yetzer Hara? All of the averos that we do. So the Yetzer Hara gets hungry after a while. If you were too righteous for too long, there's a hunger inside of you that says, I want to do something. I want to speak Lashon Hara. I want to be selfish. I want to be Mevatel Torah. And therefore, now we'll discuss in a moment, why does it use two phrases, hungry and thirsty? Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment. But the overall meaning of the pasuk is, if your Yetzer Hara is growling for food, give him food. But lechem and mayim are metaphorically referring to divrei Torah. And this is where the Vilna Gaon says, the best way to quench the Yetzer Hara is to learn Torah. And indeed, this is what the Gemara in Sukkah says. The Gemara in Sukkah says, Borasi Yetzer Hara, I have created within the human being a Yetzer Hara, an urge to do things that are not always good. This could be active sin or it could be passive sin. Laziness, selfishness, not caring about people. So what is the refuah for the Yetzer Hara? Yetzer Hara is like a sickness within a person. Barasi Torah Tavlin. I've created the Torah, which is the spice or the potion that can cure the Yetzer Hara. And in the language of the Gemara goes on and says, Impaga b'cha menuval zeh. If this disgusting entity, the Yetzer Hara, this disgusting entity is encountering you and trying to take you away from Hashem, mashcheu lebeis hamedrash, schlep it into the Beis HaMedrash, where you learn Torah. And that is the meaning of this pasuk. If your enemy is hungry, stuff him with the bread and the water of Torah. So here, based on this idea, so again, as I say, the Pshuto Shel Mikra is valid up to a point, but not completely. The basic point, that even if somebody wronged you, you should try to do good to them, that of course is true. But the idea that somehow you're getting a psychic satisfaction of making him feel bad, that l'chayre is k'neged, the iser, the oraisa, of lo sitor. But this is referring to milchemes hayetzer. Now here, the Vilna Gaon makes three very, very interesting points. First, examine the Talmudic comment on this verse. Impaga b'cha menuval zeh. If this manuva, a very interesting term for the Yetzer Hara, this disgusting creature, is bothering you, mashcheu, pull him into the Beis HaMedrash. So this is an interesting metaphor. Why should I pull him into the Beis HaMedrash? I should pull myself into the Beis HaMedrash to get away from him. Right? What is the lashon? I should pull the Yetzer Hara into the Beis HaMedrash. So here's what the Vilna Gaon says. This is exactly what Chazal say in another place. Chazal say that although the highest level of Torah is to learn Torah lishma for the glorification of Hashem, and if a person learns Torah for an ulterior motive, for honor, for glory, to be respected, that is inferior, that is Torah Shalom Lishma. But what do Chazal say? A person should always learn Torah, even not Lishma, because by learning not Lishma, you will eventually come Lishma. So here the Vilna Gaon says very pashut. If I'm seized by my Yetzer Hara, I'm not going to be able to escape the Yetzer Hara and go into the Beis Medrash to vanquish the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara won't let me. What I have to do is, I have to say I'm going to go learn, to talk to myself, to feed the Yetzer Hara itself. Meaning say, you know, if I go into the Beis Medrash, people will look at me and think I'm a tzaddik. They will think I'm a masmit. I'll become a rav or a rosh yeshiva. Meaning, mashcheu, pull the Yetzer Hara into the Beis Medrash, is exactly what Chazal say elsewhere, mitoch shelo lishma, Baal Lishma. Because if you simply say, I'm going to learn Lishma, the force of the Yetzer Hara may push you away from that right away. That's not worth it, etc. And now, this is why, you know, on the child level, we offer prizes. You know, whether it's candy or even svarim can be a Yetzer Hara too, as my wife reminds me. Kavod, stars, awards, whatever it would be. Now you might say, no, what am I giving my kid a reward for learning? He needs to know. You have to learn because it's a mitzvah. The answer is, obviously, Chazal themselves say, Mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. And the truth of the matter is, on some level, this applies at almost all levels until you become maybe a gadol mamish. Because, okay, once you reach a certain age, maybe the candies aren't going to get you to learn because you're old enough to get candy by yourself, right? You don't have to learn to get the candy. But, you know, kavod is a powerful motivator, right? The kavod, a position, and that actually affects the lishma of people on all sorts of levels. But the Vilna Gaon says that's necessary. Shemitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma. And that is the meaning of the statement of Chazal, Mashcheihu lebeis hamedrash. Pull the Yetzer Hara with you into the beis hamedrash, and that will get you to learn, because the Yetzer Hara will let you do things, not lishma. Now, there is an interesting kasha that Tosfos asks. On one hand, we say, it's a good thing to learn even for ulterior motives, even shelo lishma. Mitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma. And yet, there's another Gemara that says, if a person learns Torah shelo lishma, it would have been better if he would never have been born. His life is useless, worthless. How could that be? You just said it's a good thing to learn shelo lishma. So Tosfos answers, interestingly enough, there are two types of shelo lishma. There's a lo lishma that's okay, although it's not the best, and that's the mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. And then there's a shelo lishma that's toxic and destructive and evil, and that has no spiritual merit at all. The shelo lishma that's okay, albeit not optimal, and the one that will get you to lishma, is when you learn for ulterior motives. You learn for kavod, you learn for recognition, you learn for prizes, right? Whatever it would be. That's shelo lishma, okay? Not the highest level, but mitoch shelo lishma, ba lishma. But what is the shelo lishma that's toxic and destructive and evil and is not redeemable? That's when you learn in order to embarrass or cut down somebody else. Sometimes a person might learn because I want to show the other person is ignorant or no good. I may want to discredit a Rebbe or a Rosh Hashiva. And that type of shelo lishma, Tosfos says, does not have the promise of mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, because that is an evil motive. So we have to differentiate between motives that are not evil per se. It's not evil to want a piece of candy or even to get a position as a rav of a shul. It's not evil, but it's not the highest spiritual level, as opposed to wanting to cut somebody down. That already is shelo lishma toxic. That is not an admissible motivation. This is what Tosfos says. Now the Vilna Gaon adds another point to this. The Vilna Gaon learns like this. When we have this famous statement, and again, pay attention to the exact wording. Li'olam yomod adam Torah afilu shelo lishma. A person should learn Torah even if it's not lishma. Shemitoch shelo lishma, that from shelo lishma, yavo lishma. So most people punctuate that sentence that is the reason, meaning the statement is, learn Torah even not lishma. That's the statement. Reason, because by doing it not lishma, it will bring you to lishma. Meaning it's the reason. The Vilna Gaon punctuates it a little different. The Vilna Gaon is stating, it is not just the reason, it is part of your intention you should learn Torah shelo lishma with the intention that my lo lishma should be lishma. Meaning to say, the Vilna Gaon is saying, the rule that Torah shelo lishma will bring you to lishma is only if that is what you desire to achieve in your learning. Shemitoch shelo lishma yavo lishma is what your intention is. I am learning shelo lishma, shemitoch shelo lishma, bal lishma. Which means you need that certain purity of intention, not that you are lishma, but that you want to be lishma. In fact, the Arizal writes about the whole idea of wanting. He says there are up to 15 levels of wanting, meaning to say, even if I don't yet want something, but if I want to want it, or if I wished that I wished that I wished that I wished, he says it can be as deep as 15 levels within your consciousness and subconsciousness. There has to be some rasam at that point. By the way, as a little aside, it's not really relevant to our topic, but it's an important thing to know. What does it mean to learn Torah lishma? What is Torah lishma? Or mitzvos lishma, for that reason. So there's a big, big machlokas between the Baal HaTanya, the Shneur Zalman of Liadi. In fact, those of you that are Chabad or familiar with Hasidus, you know, you just had the Rosh Hashanah l'Chassidus, the big, big, big day of the Alter Rebbe's liberation from the Tsarist prison. This was the 19th of Kislev, which Chabad refers, although I'm not sure if not Chabad refers to it this way, it's called the Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus. And the Alter Rebbe was in prison, and of course, obviously, in those days, being in prison also meant your life was in danger as well. And he was finally released. And it was interesting that the way at least Chabad understood it, this was a cosmic struggle in Shamayim, whether Chassidus should be able to spread its truths throughout the Jewish world. And his ma'asar was a miniyah, was a withholding in the Shamayim. And when he was free, they saw it not only as the freeing of the Rebbe as a person, but min hashamayim, they gave rishus for the teachings of Chassidus to be spread. And that was seen as a very, very pivotal event. The story goes that when the Alter Rebbe was released, he was supposed to be released into the custody of a Goldberg person who was a Chassid. But apparently the Tsar's soldiers made a mistake and they released him to another Goldberg who was a big misnaget. And the Alter Rebbe had to spend 4 or 5 hours with Goldberg misnaget until the chassid came to pick him up. And for those 5 hours, the misnaget was telling the Alter Rebbe why chassidus was wrong and krum and not right. And the Alter Rebbe said that was a lot tougher than being in the Tsar's prison those 5 hours. But that is the mindset. So the Baal HaTanya writes that lishma means I'm learning Torah to be connected to Hashem. I'm consciously thinking that every word of Torah connects my neshama with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, lishma is I learn Torah to be dovok, to be connected to Hashem, to express my love of Hashem, and to be connected to Hashem. Now, it's interesting. Around the same time, shortly after, a few years after the Tanya was published, the great, great Sefer Yesod of Hasidic philosophy, Rav Chaim of Elozhin, the Vilna Gaon's Talmud, published another Sefer, which overlaps with Tanya tremendously. In fact, well, Bavitcher Rebbe even said, Nebuchadnezzar Chaim and Tanya are, you know, almost the same Sefer in a lot of ways, and it's very, very true. But this, you might call, is the Misnaget version of this religious philosophy, and that is the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim. And although the Nefesh HaChaim does not specifically refer to the Tanya, it is absolutely clear to anyone that has ever learned the two Svarim that the Nefesh HaChaim intentionally is addressing many things in the Tanya, and in many, many ways, they say the same thing. One should not exaggerate the machlokas between them. The Svarim walk together in many, many ways. But one major difference between them is the definition of what is Torah Lishma. The Bala Tanya says Torah Lishma is Torah for the purpose of being dovok b'Hashem. You consciously think about connecting your neshama to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Chaim Voloshiner points out, and I think on this he has a very strong grammatical point, Lishma doesn't mean for the sake of God. Lishma is feminine, so Lishma would mean for the sake of Torah. Torah Lishma. And Rav Chaim Voloshiner says, Torah Lishma is not as elevated as learning for the sake of being connected to God. I'll explain why in a moment. It simply means I'm learning for the sake of mastering and understanding the Torah to the best of my ability. I'm not doing it for kavod, I'm doing it to know the Torah itself. Now that sounds fairly superficial in the sense that you're not bringing a higher spiritual goal, but here's what Rav Chaim was concerned with. Rav Chaim says, of course, the purpose of Torah learning is to connect you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, Torah is to elevate and purify your soul. But Rav Chaim was concerned, if you make it too much of a conscious process of your learning, then you're going to get bored with the details. And this is a problem, again, that we certainly encounter in yeshivas all the time. Because like this, a lot, again, this may be more relevant for men, but I think the women could appreciate this idea. A lot of learning does not directly, explicitly feed spirituality. So, a person opens up a piece of Gemara, and the Gemara has many, many technical questions about what happens if this person claims this thing in the land. Two people come in with a talis, one says, I found it, and the other says, I found it. The dinim of splitting things. Or if an egg is laid on Yom Tov, are you allowed to use it? Or how do you shecht a cow if you shecht it from this direction or that direction? And people are sometimes wondering, how does this bring me closer to God? It's just detail after detail. Or you're learning halacha about you can whip toilet paper this way and not this way. I know that Adam Steinbach, when he first, years and years ago, when he first started his English translation of Gemara, now it's being taken over and it's going much faster. But initially, a major mainstream American publisher, Random House, was publishing the Steinsaltz Talmud. And they wanted to make a big production of it. So they organized a symposium in the New York Times building with all of the American intellectuals that they would discuss Talmud, which gives, and Random House was really, you know, saying, this will give you the meaning of life, this will give you the purpose of life, this will unlock the secrets. And all of these great philosophers can show up. And Rabbi Steinsaltz, who does have a sense of humor, and I'm absolutely certain that he was playing on that sense of humor, he picked the most technical Gemara to go over. And everybody there was just, they didn't know what on earth was going on. What secrets of life? How do you salt meat? And, you know. And his point basically was exactly what the Nefesh HaChaim's point is. And that is, Torah does connect you to God. Your neshama is connected to Hashem with every word of Torah. But on a conscious level, you're not always going to feel that. It's building you up inside in all sorts of mysterious ways. So Rav Chaim Voloshiner was afraid, if a person puts this idea that I have to be connected to Hashem in my learning too much in their consciousness, they're not going to have the patience to learn about ripping toilet paper or fraudulent claims on land or how to salt meat. They're going to only want something that directly talks about these matters. So Rav Chaim Voloshiner says, don't think about it too much. It happens automatically. Think about the text in front of you. Think about the din in front of you. And in time, that's going to bring you closer to Hashem. So the Bala Tanya, you might say, Hasidus generally had a more self-conscious idea of Dveikus. Rav Chaim Chas V'Shalom is not disparaging Dveikus, but he's suggesting that Dveikus should not, Dveikus meaning cleaving and attachment to God, should not be a conscious thought. But even Rav Chaim says the following, and he has a beautiful, beautiful proof. He says that every once in a while you should stop your learning and spend 5 or 10 minutes thinking about being connected to God. Meaning don't have it be in your mind all the time while you're learning, but stop and think and ponder how this connects you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he gives a very interesting example. The Gemara, and he uses a dry halacha to prove his point. A person buys grain. Now, in the time of Chazal, the belief was that if the grain was mixed in with some of the dirt from which it grew, its natural soil would be a preservative. So as a result, if you bought a ton of grain, a certain percentage would be the dirt and the rocks, because that was a preservative. So the question is, how much preservative can I sell you? I mean, I can't, you know, if you buy a ton of grain, I can't give you a half a ton of dirt, because then you're only getting half a ton of grain. So how much of what I sell you can be the preservative? So the Mishnah says 1/24 of the total. So whatever it would be. So whatever measure I'm giving you, 1/24 of that measure can be dirt and rocks, and you cannot complain, because that's the preservative of the grain. So says Rav Chaim, Dveikus Hashem and Yiras Hashem is the preservative of the grain of Torah. And therefore, one should spend, he actually gives a ratio, 1/24 of their learning time on conscious thought of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the rest should be the learning itself. Now I thought to myself, in many yeshivos, they have half an hour a day where they learn Mutzer and Yiras Shamayim and more religious ideas. So it's interesting that that would mean in a 12-hour learning day, the half hour is 1/24. So I'm wondering if the half an hour Mutzer Seder might be based on Rav Chaim of Volozhiner's teaching. This is in distinction to, let's say, a Chabad yeshiva that spends around 3 to 4 hours a day doing chassidus, which again is very consistent with the Baal HaTanya's understanding of Torah Lishma. Okay, but again, as I say, all of this was a side point, although it's an important side point. What do we mean by Torah Lishma? Is it Torah for the sake of connecting to God, or is it Torah for the sake of mastering Torah itself? But be it as it may, the Vilna Gaon does clearly locate in this pasuk. Again, we're still on pasuk Perek Chaf Hei, pasuk Chaf Aleph, that if your enemy is hungry, pull your enemy into the Beis HaMedrash, and even if your motivations are Yetzer Hara motivations of kavod and recognition, mitoch shalo lishma, ba lishma. And that is why to this day, I mean, listen, we have in the state of Israel, we have awards for people who write Sforim. A person writes a Sefer, he needs an award, whether it's a reward, money, or an award. The answer is, people don't like to say it, but these are motivations a person needs, especially if a person lives in relative poverty and deprivation. The recognition that a person gets can give a person a certain amount of chizuk. And that chizuk is understood as legitimate. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz himself, who was an absolute gadol and tzaddik, not just a gadol, but also a god in righteousness and humility, he said that when he gave, you know, sometimes a person gives a shiur and people leave. Sometimes people have to leave, sometimes people just don't like to hear a shiur for whatever reason. We've all been there, you know. But Rav Chaim said to me, when he was going to give a shiur, and some guys left the Beis Medrash, for whatever reason, you know, it could be a medical emergency, he felt bad. It hurt him. He said he was very honest with himself. He said, it hurt him. Because Every person needs to be appreciated for what they do. That doesn't make you a Baal Gaiva. Now, it does mean that we are not on the absolute highest level. Had we been on the absolute highest level, that wouldn't bother us. Okay, good. So we're not on the highest level. But the need for appreciation and the need for recognition does not mean, chas v'shalom, a person is a Baal Gaiva. This is a human need that only the greatest tzaddikim are able to escape. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz said that he was a great Rosh Hashiva. He himself needed that amount of little bit amount of recognition or kavod and the like. So that's what we call the good shalom l'shma. Shemitov shalom l'shma, bal l'shma. Actually, it reminds me a little bit of a nice quip that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky once said. You know, the halacha is that in Shemona Esrei, whenever a bracha pertains to something that's going on in your personal life, you can add a personal bakasha, a personal request in the Shemona Esrei, at that particular point. So if there's a sick person in the bracha of Rifa'enu, you can add the sick person and the like. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said, where does a person pray if a person wants success in Torah learning? So he says, if he is a bachar in yeshiva, he should insert the request in the bracha asking Hashem for wisdom and knowledge, atachone. But if he's looking for a job or already has a shteller, he should insert it in Barech Aleinu, ask Hashem for parnasa. He says that he should be successful in learning, so he'll get a good parnasa. But you know the story of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, as a young man, interviewed to be a Magid Shir in Yeshivas Kol Torah. He was not Rosh Hashiva initially, he was a Magid Shir. And a person has to give a Shir, right? You know, how do you get hired as a Magid Shir? You give a Shir in front of the Rosh Yeshiva. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach gave a Shir, and one of the senior Rosh Yeshivas, Rav Baruch Kutschdat, asked the Kashak. And Rav Shlomo Zalman thought for a moment, and he said, I don't know, your kasha is a good kasha, I can't answer it, it ruins my shir, so I'll just withdraw everything. And he went home and he told his Rebbetzin, he said, I messed up today. I was on an interview to give a shir, and Rav Kutschdat slugged me up, he refuted my shir, and I guess that's it, I'm certainly not going to get a job. Now in those days nobody had phones. A phone took 5 years. So a shaliach came and knocked at the door and says, the hanhola of the yeshiva told me that we were inviting you to be a Rosh Yeshiva. So he said, how is it shaykh? I messed up. He says, any person that is willing to be moda on the emes, to acknowledge the truth in front of talmidim, in front of other people, that's the person we want. Because any talmid chacham knows how to drain himself out of something. He could have said something that may have been acceptable, and he certainly could have put one over the guys, Bachrit. No. But he didn't, because if he felt it wasn't true, he wouldn't say it. That's what we want in a Rosh Hashiva, somebody that's moda ala emes. And that's already learning lishma. You're not doing for kavod. You're willing to even take away your kavod for that. Very, very high level. Okay. So that's the first part of the pasuk. Schlep your yetzer hara into the Beis Medrash. But you'll notice, though, that the reference to Torah is twofold. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread. And if your enemy is thirsty, give him water. Now, both bread and water are references to Torah, but why are these two phrases used? So here the Vilna Gaon says another very beautiful and interesting thought. The Vilna Gaon says that we know that at least the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh, is divided into two major components. There is what we call halacha. Now halacha doesn't just mean final halacha, but the process of law of halacha. So for example, around 65% of the Talmud is devoted to legal questions, how to do the mitzvos, their details, their reasons, their applications. But then there's another portion of Torah that is called Agadah. Now, Agadah is sometimes translated as legends, but that's absolutely not a correct translation. It's either called Agadah or Haggadah or Agadeta, which is Aramaic. All of those is the same word. And really, the only way you could define Agadeta is almost by exclusion. Anything in Chazal that is not halachic analysis is Agadeta. Agadeta is everything else. Now that everything else is extraordinarily interesting. It refers to Midrashim, many of the stories about biblical personalities. It refers to philosophy. It refers to Midos Tovos, developing character, etc. It refers to the theology of Judaism. Many have said, if Halacha is the body of Judaism, Agadeta is the neshama of Judaism. It is the spirit of Judaism. In fact, Chazal say that the learning of Agada is especially suited to develop love of Hashem. A person who wants to become close to Hashem, you're osek in Agadeta. And it's important to understand, the Rambam already writes that there are two groups of people who look at Midrashim and Agadeta in opposite ways, and both of them are wrong. One group says every statement in Midrash and Agada is literally true, 100%. If it says Vashti had a tail, then Vashti had a tail. If it says Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos high, which is 20 feet, and he only reached the ankle of Og Melech HaBashan, then yes, Moshe Rabbeinu was 20 feet high, 10 amos, 20 feet high, and Og Melech HaBashan was 100 amos high, whatever it is. The Medrash is absolutely literal. That is school number one. School number two says, these Midrashim, God forbid, are ridiculous, and they're Baba Mises, and they're obviously not true. The Rambam says both views are incorrect, because the true view is the following. Every single statement of Chazal in Agadeta is communicating deep fundamental truths. But the truths are not necessarily meant to be literal truths. Chazal used metaphor and parable and mashal and even hyperbole, exaggeration, to bring out a point. The point is absolutely emes. But the outer shell was just a means of communication. And therefore, the people that say Agadeta is literal are making a mistake. And the people that say Agadeta is Baba Maisa is making a mistake, even a worse mistake. Agadeta is absolutely fundamental truth. But the fundamental truth may be conveyed in ways that grab a person's attention. Now the Rambam says the following. The Rambam says it's not true for everything. Some Agadetas are meant to be quite literal. So for example, we believe in miracles. So if you have an Agadeta that says, for example, that the oil of Hanukkah burnt 8 days, that is meant to be a literal story, just like Kriyas Yamsev, right? We're not going to give that. It has symbolic meaning, but it also has a literal meaning. So the Rambam says many things in Agadeta, even if they're supernatural, are in fact true, literally true. Others are metaphors for deep spiritual truths, but are not meant to be literal truths. So the $64,000 question is, how do you know which one is which? Which one is which? So the Rambam made a promise that Litzareinu, we have not seen evidence that he kept it. He says, Bezras Hashem, I will compile a sefer that will go through the Agadetas of the Midrash, the Midrashim, and the Gemaras, and I will indicate to you the reasons why this one is literal and this one is figurative. This is, unfortunately, one of the great unwritten books, as far as we know. The Rambam either didn't get around to it, which is probably more likely, or the book is lost. And so we don't have the Rambam's work, so to speak. But let me point out that the life work of the Maharal of Prague, in all of the Maharal's many books, all of his many books, is essentially what you might call the unlocking of the secret symbolism of Agada and Medrash. So if you go through every Maharal, every story in the Gemara, the Maharal will give a symbolic meaning, how it reflects spiritual truths. And again, Maharal is a difficult limud, but modern Talmidei Chachamim, Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zichrono Livracha, and others, Rav Huttner, they devoted so much time to unlocking the Maharal, which in turn is unlocking the language of Chazal. Okay, so this is what the Vilna Gaon himself says. The Vilna Gaon says, in Agada and Medrash are genuzin kol hasodos, all the secrets of creation are in the Agada and in the Medrash, the secret structure of how things work. Halacha tells us how we are to behave, and of course one can spend one's life trying to learn all the details of that. But Agada is the ultimate spirit of all of those halachas. So here's what the Vilna Gaon says. The Vilna Gaon says, Lechem umayim. Lechem is halacha, because halacha is the basic nutrition that keeps you alive, like bread. But mayim is agadata. Shemoshech libo, it draws your heart to God the way water flows. And therefore, agadata is called mayim, and lechem, which is basic nutrition, is called halacha. Now, in another passage, the Vilna Gaon also says agada is called yayin. Yayin. Yayin is wine, because the gematria of yayin is the same as the gematria of sod. Right? You heard the statement, nichnas yayin, when wine comes into your body, yatsa sod, secrets come out. Right? You get more talkative when you're drunk. Well, but yayin is gematria 60, sod, I'm sorry, yayin is gematria 70, and sod is gematria 70. When 170 goes in, the other 70 goes out. But the Vilna Gaon says, Agada is called yayin, because Agada also is mechuvan, connected to sod, the deepest secrets of the Torah. Rav Chaim Shalevich used to say, the reason why in yeshivos they skip Agadata, they often skip, in other words, when we're learning Gemara and we come to Agadata, the Rebbe may skip it, literally. Not because it's so superficial or it's so easy that we don't have to give a share on it, but because there is so much depth that we're not ready to handle it. So based on this idea, the Vilna Gaon now, so that's lechem and mayim. Lechem is halacha, and mayim is agada. But now he makes a very, very interesting assertion. There are two primary yetzer haras that a person has. One is the yetzer hara that's called kasani. Kasani is kas. The yetzer hara that's connected to anger. Now, this would have a whole bunch of affiliated midot. So, for example, this is the yetzer hara of arrogance, power, ego, ambition. They're connected to anger in some way, because anger is the idea that I don't want somebody to be better than me. So it's connected to jealousy, competitiveness, ambition, power, ego, pride. Will subsume those things under the kasani. There's another yetzer hara, which is called tavani. Tavani is taiva, and that's connected to laziness and pleasure seeking. So, the person who doesn't want to get out of bed in the morning, or the person who simply wants to stay home and watch TV while eating chocolates, not an ambitious person, right? Not full of ambition. He's primarily the Mita of Taiva. The Vilna Gaon looks at Taiva as very passive and lazy. But the one that gets up at 5 o'clock to be the first one in the stock market or whatever it is, that's connected to Kasani. And the Vilna Gaon says that's why we find that in some places the Yetzer Hara is called fire, and in some places the Yetzer Hara is called water. Because water is the taiva, I want to relax, I by the pool, etc. Eish is the aggression of kas. So the Vilna Gaon says a nice chiddush. He actually says that for the yetzer hara of anger, halacha is the best antidote. Because halacha, right, the give and take of halacha, if you ever look in the yeshiva based medrash, it tends to be kind of aggressive. People are yelling at each other. I know sometimes people are very shocked. They walk into the yeshiva based medrash, and you know, someone is yelling and banging on the table and saying, "You idiot!" You know, banging away. This is very, very strange in many ways, especially if you're used to a university library. You know, don't talk anything like that. So the Vilna Gaon says that if one is consumed with the yetzer of aggression, so to speak, then halacha is a way of channeling and taming that in a positive way. But if one is attracted to pleasure, so agada will give him a pleasure that will be much, much greater than the pleasure of the taivas of Eilam Hazeh. And therefore, imra'ev sonecha, the first part of the pasuk, if your enemy is hungry, refers to the fire of ambition. Give him the lechem of halacha. If he is thirsty, meaning to say he is seeking pleasure, then give him the water or the yayin of agada. And the Vilna Gaon says different parts of Torah. Now again, you can make this analysis more specific, but the interesting thesis is that different parts of Torah are helpful in addressing different defects of character. It's a very, very interesting idea that it's not just the generic idea, learn and you'll be fine, but rather there are different halakim that speak to different parts of the neshama. And the Vilna Gaon says agadata helps the baal taiva, and he says halacha will help the baal kas. But again, kas and taiva are really very, very general categories. Among kas, that includes ambition, selfishness, jealousy. Taiva primarily includes laziness and pleasure seeking. If you are active and ambitious in seeking your taivas, the Vilna Gaon would call that kasani, not tavani. Tavani, in the Vilna Gaon's vocabulary, is the very passive laziness of not even wanting to get up to the refrigerator, just want to have it right. Right, I want the remote control of the refrigerator to be right next to me. Right, that's what a tavani is. I'm sorry, someone had a... Yeah.
I just was looking at Rashi and he says, I don't know how you pronounce it, but he says it, v'ha'achileu milachma shel Torah or milchama shel Torah. Lechem is from lashon milchama.
Yes. Yes, that's a very excellent point. And that might explain why halacha is called lechem, because it is conducted as milchama. And by the way, grammarians actually say that milchama and lechem are connected, because the original reason for war was to be able to get more land, to grow food, or whatever it would be. So it was connected to survival, where you didn't have enough produce for a given area, there would be milchama to get lechem, milchamta shel Torah. Let me just end with one final vort. I guess Hanukkah, I'll say next Sunday is still Hanukkah, right? The last day of Hanukkah, so we will have, I will give you a share on Hanukkah next week. I just want to share with you a thought from the Chafetz Chaim. That is, we read last week about the angel of Esav that tried to destroy Yaakov Avinu. And he was not successful. And the question becomes, why do we find such an angelic force or demonic force only trying to kill Yaakov, and we don't find it with Avram and Yitzchak. And you don't find a parallel situation. So the Chafetz Chaim used to say that we know Pirkei Avos tells us that the world rests on three pillars: Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. And we know that each of the Avos represent one of these pillars. Avraham represents the pillar of kindness, and Yitzchak represents the pillar of divine service. He was a korban. And Yaakov, he spent 14 years in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver, represents the pillar of Torah. Now the world requires three pillars. If a person just has Torah learning, he is defective. The Gemara even says, any person that says, all I need is Torah, doesn't even have Torah. But even though you need all three, Torah does have an importance beyond the other two for the following reason. Through proper Torah, you will come to the other two. When I learn Torah, I learn about how to do chesed. I learn about how to serve Hashem. So Torah can bring me to the other two. But the other two will not bring me to Torah. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim says, when the Yetzer Hara tries to destroy a Jew, the Yetzer Hara is perfectly willing to let Jews keep mitzvos in the short run if it knows there's not going to be an intergenerational continuity. So the Yetzer Hara didn't mind Avram doing chesed, because a Judaism based on loving kindness alone is not going to last after a while. The Yetzer Hara didn't mind a Yitzchak doing Avodas Hashem, because without Torah learning, that's going to peter out. But only when Yaakov represents Torah is there now the potential for Nitzchiyut. Nitzchiyut is eternity. And that the Yetzer Hara, the angel of Esav, the Yetzer Hara, wanted to stop and destroy. And if you go back, at least to the history of American Judaism, Jewish life, you actually see this very, very clearly. You know, the first big immigrations came after the Russian pogroms in the 1880s. And, you know, some of them were religious, but their primary emphasis was on what you might call chesed organizations. They created Jewish hospitals, burial societies, free loan societies, even country clubs, which, you know, because even the German Jews wouldn't take in the Polish or Russian Jews. So these were chesed institutions. Their children, almost totally not religious, almost totally. The next big wave around World War I, that was the age of the synagogue, magnificent synagogues. I remember these old synagogues from my youth, with stained glass windows, cathedral-like. These synagogues were beautiful, the services were glorious. Most of these synagogues that look like cathedrals are actually cathedrals. They were sold to goyim, they were sold to churches. Again, halachically, that's extremely problematical, but without getting into the halachas, they figured out ways, questionable ways to do it, but they did it. You see, it is only really, again, I'm exaggerating and I'm leaving out a lot of detail, obviously a lot of nuance, but the growth and the flourishing of a religious community in the United States really started in a very intensive way only after World War II and the 1950s with Rosh Raga Fadel Mendelovich. And what he did was, is he spearheaded, I mean, one has to realize the enormous contribution of this one person. He spearheaded the day schools in the United States. Of course, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yochanan was there earlier, and Torah V'das was there earlier, so there were little pockets. But in terms of creating a whole network around the United States of day schools and then later yeshiva high schools, that really came only afterwards. But the point was, the growth of the Orthodox community does match the growth of Torah. I mean, the Chafetz Chaim's words were so prophetic. It is only through Torah learning that you have a nitzchias, an intergenerational continuity. Without Torah learning, Judaism can survive a short while, on avoda, on gemilas chasadim, on bagels and lox even. But it does not carry over to the next generation. And that's why the Sorah Shel Esav had to destroy Yaakov. One final, just give me two more minutes because I want to throw one thing about Hanukkah in. That we know that Yaakov came back to fight, that came back in the night to retrieve something. And that's when he met the angel of Esav. And Chazal say he wanted to retrieve some small jars, earthenware jars, that he left behind. What type of business is that? Earthenware jars? He puts himself in danger? It is brought down in the Zohar that this was an earthenware jar that contained oil that Noah had squeezed when the Yonah brought back an olive leaf, apparently brought back a fruit as well. And Noah had preserved that oil in that Pach HaShemen as a sign of God saving the world after that destruction. And that was lovingly handed down eventually to Avram and to Yitzchak and to Yaakov. And Yaakov went back to retrieve that Pach. And that was the Pach HaShemen that was found so many centuries later in the Beis HaMikdash, out of which the Hanukkah candle burnt for 8 days. Yeah.
And I heard that Medrash. I also heard that Yonah went to Gan Eden to get that branch.
Oh, the Yonah went to Gan Eden. That's a beautiful, beautiful addition. So, what is the symbol of the light of Hanukkah? That no matter how great the darkness, and no matter how small we think the light is, we do what we can, and Hashem blesses our ability beyond what we thought was possible. And that's the lesson of Hanukkah. There's much, much darkness in the world. And we think that the light that we can light is so small and insignificant. But just as all the way back to the Yonah, this was the sign that even if the world was destroyed, Hashem will bring it back. Hashem will bring bracha. Even when the world is dark, Hashem will give you light, and that light may look small, but that light is much, much more powerful than you ever thought was possible. So, you know, Hanukkah really is a tremendously, tremendously beautiful message, because we often, whether it's our individual lives or whether it's the collective lives of Klal Yisrael or the dangers that the world faces, it's our job to bring whatever little bit of light we can bring in, and even if we think it's ineffectual, we do what we can, and Hashem blesses the efforts beyond what we thought possible. So I wish everyone a Freilich and a Lichtiger Chanukah.
Yeah.